OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Joanna Visicelli.
And I'm Anthony Moyet. We have media news from all over the planet. Today we have reports about media in Myanmar, Malaysia, Nicaragua, Vietnam, China, Brazil, and India.
From Myanmar, we have a report about the Irrawaddy.
The Irrawaddy is an independent news group in exile, covering Myanmar and Southeast Asia. Why can't these Burmese journalists publish in Myanmar?
From Malaysia, we have a report about film censorship.
Is there free media in Malaysia? Not when it comes to LGBTQ content. Why is the Malaysian government censoring LGBTQ films? Which films are caught in the government net?
From Nicaragua, we have a report about how Nicaraguans get around media censorship.
The Nicaraguan government of Daniel Ortega has done its best to shut down or take over the news media in Nicaragua. What are Nicaraguans doing to get their news? Can you beat the censors?
Vietnam is battling the giants of social media. Can the government control what citizens see on the internet?
Can they make Meta and Google follow their rules for content? Will these foreign internet platforms be forced to take down offensive content in 24 hours? The Vietnamese government thinks so. Who runs the internet in Vietnam? The government or the corporate lords of the internet? When the government of Vietnam says jump, do Meta and Google say how high?
From China, we have a report about the celebrity influencers of live streaming. Who is the lipstick king, and why did he mysteriously disappear and then reappear?
How popular are these streaming celebrities in China? Are they influential enough to be a political problem for the government? What happens when an influencer gets too influential?
From Brazil, we have social media and election news. Was social media disinformation a big problem in the recent presidential election?
Did the social media in Brazil distribute election news and information, or just spread disinformation? Did disinformation affect the outcome of the election?
From India, we have news about internet shutdowns. Why does the government shut down the internet in parts of India?
Do these internet shutdowns help keep the peace and stifle dissent? Is this political censorship? Should a democracy turn off the internet to stop a violent conflict?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Myanmar is not a nation that respects civil liberties or freedom of the press. The state controls the media, and there's no space for independent journalism in Myanmar. What happened to the journalists of Myanmar? They have been forced to flee their oppression. Where have they gone? What are they doing? My co-host, Joanna Visicelli, has a report for us about the Irrawaddy and press freedom in Myanmar. The Irrawaddy is a news organization run by journalists in exile who cover Myanmar and Southeast Asia from their home office in Thailand. Joanna, what is the Irrawaddy, and why is it based in Thailand and not Myanmar?
Irrawaddy is a Burmese newspaper. It was banned by the military junta in Myanmar. Its license was revoked on October 29, 2022. The International Press Institute said that it was revoked because the publication was allegedly reporting stuff that was damaging state security, the rule of law, and public tranquility. The newspaper is not based in Myanmar, and it's based in Thailand because activists fled the military regime in what was previously known as Burma, now known as Myanmar. From exile, they formed the newspaper in 1993 to discuss the ongoing atrocities in Myanmar.
What types of events does the Irrawaddy report about?
So the publication itself said that it has been at the forefront of reporting on the regime's bloody crackdowns on peaceful anti-junta protesters and its atrocities against civilians. Myanmar is a very restrictive and repressive country. According to Freedom House, some of the acts against civilians include human trafficking and child labor. They said that trafficking victims include women and girls subjected to forced sex work and domestic servitude. Freedom House also explained other horrific acts. The government forces many children into military and rebel groups. There's weak laws on domestic abuse and rape that do not protect citizens. And the army has even raped ethnically minority women. The junta has implemented curfews, residency rules, and neighborhood raids. When the junta gained control in Myanmar in February of 2021, it essentially ended democracy in the country. Human Rights Watch explained that the coup effectively ended the democratic transition under Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy. The junta commits countless crimes against humanity in Myanmar, including murders, sexual abuse, and public detentions, and the Irrawaddy covered these atrocities.
Has the Irrawaddy been targeted by the military junta before?
The military junta has targeted the Irrawaddy before. even before they took control of the country, and even before the coup, they were targeting the newspaper. In March of 2020, the military sued the publication's senior editor for defamation, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. The editor, Yi Mi, said that in his reporting of the armed conflict in the Rakhine and Chin states, the Irrawaddy was doing their job, exposing what was really happening on the ground and reporting the suffering of the people living in the conflict zone. The International Press Institute also reported that the regime has previously targeted the Irrawaddy with arrests, raids, and legal threats after the coup.
How does the junta in Myanmar continue to treat journalists?
The junta treats journalists in Myanmar horribly. They've implemented harsh press restrictions since it took power in 2021, and they continue to suppress journalists. From the coup's takeover until October 25, 2022, according to Human Rights Watch, the junta has arrested 98 journalists, and 46 of them remain in detention. The military junta has also blocked the Irrawaddy's website in Myanmar, according to the diplomat. The Irrawaddy's offices in Yangon were raided by the junta, and the government sued the newspaper for, quote, disregarding the military in its reporting on the anti-regime protests that were then blossoming across the country. The Irrawaddy is also not the only newspaper in Myanmar that's faced censorship. Freedom House said licenses for several independent media organizations were rescinded in March. Some of these organizations still continue to report, but the reporters are forced to report in hiding or in exile. The Committee to Protect Journalists reported that Myanmar was the world's second worst jailer of journalists in 2021. Freedom House said that many dozens of journalists have fled Myanmar after the military coup gained power and restricted press freedoms. The organization continued to explain that though the regime released several journalists throughout the year, many of those jailed faced criminal charges. The CPJ senior analyst and Southeast Asia representative Sean Crispin said, "The Irrawaddy epitomizes the type of independent news reporting Myanmar's junta is bidding to outlaw, but its growing abuse of arbitrary laws to target and jail journalists is ultimately a sign of its illegitimacy and weakness. The banning of the Irrawaddy and ongoing treatment of journalists and the press proves that the junta's actions are aimed at suppressing Myanmar voices." For New Media Beat, I'm Joanna Vicicelli. Back to you, Anthony.
Thanks, Joanna. Let's jump from Myanmar to Malaysia. Emma Kutsis is ready to report about film censorship in Malaysia. Emma, what do we need to know about media in Malaysia to understand this news about the government banning films? How does Freedom House score Malaysia in terms of freedom in general? Is there a free media in Malaysia?
Despite having the federal constitution, the government has a great deal of political pressure to stop the media from tackling taboo subjects, according to the Freedom House.
Why are multiple LGBT movies censored in Malaysia?
Multiple LGBT films are censored due to governmental rules. The Malaysian Censorship Board censors the films because the community is not protected. The board bans films that violate any religious, cultural, moral values in Malaysia.
And what are the LGBT rules in Malaysia?
Same-sex marriages are not permitted or legal. People will face significant challenges such as extreme beatings, public executions under the penal code.
Now, what specific movies are censored and why?
The Toy Story spin-off called Lightyear includes a same-sex kiss, so that will not be screening. Also, a new film called Strange World has a character who is openly gay who has a crush on another boy. That movie had a lot of controversy, and the Film Censorship Board said acts like this will hinder a child's development. For New Media Beat, I'm Emma Kutsis. Back to you, Anthony.
Thank you, Emma. What can citizens do when their government attempts to restrict their access to news? Are there ways to get around a government efforts to control the news? Let's take a look at how Nicaraguans are confronting and getting around the censorship of news and media in Nicaragua.
Host Anthony Moya covers the media in Nicaragua and Central America for New Media Beat. His last report was about the importance of the internet in Nicaragua and how the authoritarian government of Daniel Ortega continues to restrict access to independent news media. This week, Anthony Moya is here to report on the ways that Nicaraguans get around these government restrictions. How have citizens and journalists dealt with the situation? Anthony, let's start with the problem. Is there still an independent news media in Nicaragua, or has the Ortega regime shut down or captured the news media in Nicaragua?
Right, so this is a detailed, big question. The Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega and his government have unleashed a campaign of political terror on the country, first of all. A lot of this is related to the difference between state-controlled or state-owned media and independent media. This is because the news and media that are having difficulty are the opposition news media or the independent news media. The ones that are having no problem at all are the ones that are either state-controlled or owned by the friends of the Ortega regime. So there are wealthy families who support the Ortega regime, and they don't have a problem. Therefore, as long as you're supporting the regime, your media is not being treated harshly, right? So when thinking about a lot of the media and news in Nicaragua, we need to think about the ownership of these different sources of media. This is very important because the relationship of the newspapers, the television channels, the radio stations, right? These are ran by Daniel Ortega, who is a former Sandinista, but is really acting like an autocrat, authoritarian dictator. So this relationship, media, and the Ortega regime is very important to acknowledge. Currently in the country of Nicaragua, there is essentially no independent media, you know, aside from his cronies, his buddies. This is because of the repression that Daniel Ortega is linked to with oppression of politicians, civil organizations, and independent media.
So what independent press is still publishing from outside of Nicaragua?
I'm glad you asked. Newspapers such as La Prensa are still publishing, but it's important to note that they're publishing from outside of Nicaragua. Most of these people are doing journalism explicitly in opposition to what they call the Ortega-Murillo regime. It's important to acknowledge that it's very hard, very difficult to be an independent journalist or an independent news organization in Nicaragua currently. Radio Dario and La Prensa are still in existence outside of Nicaragua. There's many news media that have been forced out of Nicaragua that are still covering Nicaragua. Confidencial is another example of this.
What is the significance of Confidencial?
So Confidencial is an independent Nicaraguan exile news source organization, but they definitely present themselves as against the Ortega regime, right? So this is a news organization with an agenda to bring news to Nicaragua. And this source talks about Nicaraguan media. It's both media in Nicaragua, but also media by Nicaraguans outside of Nicaragua who have been forced out by the Ortega regime. This exile news source, Confidencial, reports that despite the persecution and censorship of the Ortega Murillo regime, they continue to inform the population in a context where doing so is punishable by imprisonment. Despite the persecution, so this is like a free, liberated Nicaraguan news site that is doing some sort of nonprofit activist journalism.
How do mobile phones help Nicaraguans get their news?
This is also very important. So in terms of controlling Nicaraguan opinion, the Ortega regime needs to deal with Nicaraguans who are using social media and chat apps in Nicaragua, but also their connections to people elsewhere in the world, such as Nicaraguans who've left and fled for economic opportunity and plague repression.
Why is WhatsApp significant?
WhatsApp is very significant. You know, it's one of the apps that people are using to get around censorship in Nicaragua, right? So although not what a Nicaraguan farmer would be using, a Nicaraguan journalist trying to evade censorship would be.
Do Nicaraguans get their news from YouTube?
Yes. So as more people get the internet, YouTube becomes accessible. People are streaming videos on their phones through YouTube, which is a popular platform to use. Juan Sebastian Gomez is a very important YouTuber. He's only 25, and he's had a big impact on using his channel to speak on the crisis. His videos have been viewed over 1,000 times between Facebook and YouTube. Now, this has provoked threats against himself and his family for talking about the Ortega government, but he assures that he'll continue manifesting his opinions. Gomez, he arrived in Nicaragua when he was 12, and he's lived his life there until this past June when he decided to leave for his safety. So he's an example of one of these media coverers of Nicaragua from outside of the country, and it'll be interesting to see how his coverage continues in the future. For New Media Beat, I'm Anthony Moyet. Back to you, Joanna.
Thanks, Anthony. Daniel Ortega's Nicaragua is an authoritarian political system that has transformed the authoritarian socialism of his Sandinista party into a market dictatorship led by one powerful family, the Ortegas. Vietnam is also technically a communist government that has also welcomed the market but kept its centralized control over the media, politics, and culture. Both nations are experimenting with different forms of state capitalism. Both nations need the internet to grow economically but are concerned that the internet, and especially social media, are a threat to their hold on political power. Vietnam wants to allow their citizens access to foreign social media platforms, but only if these powerful platforms will allow Vietnamese rules for content moderation. Who should make the rules for the internet in Vietnam? The Vietnamese government or the corporate global giants of the internet? Alyssa Quattrini has the story for New Media Beat. Alyssa, can people in Vietnam access the same social media that we do here in the United States?
The people of Vietnam can access the same social media that we do here in the United States. They can access YouTube and TikTok, which are popular used apps here in the U.S.
Why did this 24-hour takedown requirement begin?
The Vietnam government enforces the 24-hour takedown requirement to limit the spread of false news and to keep the digital world clean. This takedown was implemented in response to numerous instances of fake news being shared. According to FreedomHouse.com, the 24-hour takedown is primarily targeting posts on free expression, religious freedom, and civil society activism.
Should governments and/or individuals be able to demand that platforms take down user content?
Governments and individuals should not be able to demand that platforms remove user content, since it restricts people's freedom of expression. The population of Vietnam should be able to post and or participate in media expression without the fear of official removal. Government decisions should not enable the general public to make the decision to remove user content. Since the government wants to be able to take down content swiftly, it is on individuals to carefully watch what they post.
Who gets to make the rules in Vietnam? Local governments or the global big tech firms?
In this situation, the local government has the authority to establish these rules for their country. The Vietnam government has ordered technology companies to store data and tighten cybersecurity standards. Since Vietnam is ruled by the Communist Party, it maintains strict media censorship and will not allow any material that contradicts what is permitted to be released. The government makes the decisions, and the world's largest technology companies must comply.
What is the big concern of the takedown? How are the big media sites dealing with this, and are they complying?
The big concern with the takedown is that it is fully taking away the freedom of expression and the rights from the population of Vietnam. The Vietnam population believes this violates their rights and makes the internet less free. The major media platforms such as TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter have a few days to respond to the Vietnam's government takedown orders. TikTok is one of the most popular platforms, but because it is known as a safe environment for free expression, the government will ensure that any media that violates the rules is removed from these sites. Facebook is cooperating by removing any media post that violates the laws, as Instagram and Twitter. For New Media Beat, I'm Alyssa Quattrini. Back to you, Joanna.
Thanks, Alyssa. Let's talk about live streaming in China. Just how big is the business of live streaming in Chinese media? What are the most important streaming platforms? Who are the biggest and wealthiest live streaming influencers? Is this entertainment? Is this business? And what happens when these live stream celebrities become too influential?
Kayla Sedetto is on the China Influencer Beat today. She noticed a recent news story about a famous influencer with an interesting name. Who is the lipstick king of live streaming in China? There was also a mystery. The lipstick king disappeared. And just as suddenly he reappeared. Kayla, who is China's lipstick king, and why did his disappearance and reappearance become an international news story?
So, good question. So, Lipstick King is considered a social star in China. He is one of the biggest Chinese influencers in China and brought a lot of revenue from being an influencer there. Sometime in 2022, the Lipstick King randomly disappeared and reappeared with no mention of the disappearance once reoccurring.
Why is the Lipstick King relevant?
So, the Lipstick King is from China. His real name's Austin Lee Jikia. And he was born in June 1992, so he's 30 years old. According to a Chinese source called What's on Weibo, Austin Lee is known as one of China's most successful e-commerce live streaming hosts there. He's known as the best salesman of beauty products in China, says SCMP. He got his nickname by selling 15,000 lipsticks within 5 minutes.
What's the difference between an American influencer and a Chinese influencer?
So, as we all know, China is a communist country, meaning that they rule what is and isn't censored or banned. An American influencer is known to influence people to buy and try new products. They're known for advertising and having their own platforms that people look up to. Influencers typically use their own platforms to get their target followers and audiences to try a particular service or a product. Influencers then affiliate themselves with brand partnerships. However, Chinese influencers are referred to as KOLs. KOLs stand for Key Opinion Leaders. Chinese influencers are known for live streaming and standing for social media influence. Li has over 64 million followers on his live stream platform, and it's called Taobao Live. Sorry if I butchered that. The goal of the Chinese influencer is to impact the public's perception of a brand through media platforms and live streaming.
Okay, where did the lipstick king go, and when did he reappear in the spotlight?
So, Li went from an online sensation to mysteriously vanishing to strangely reappearing online again just about a few months ago. He was abruptly cut off during a live stream video back in June 2022. Why was he cut off? What's the real question at hand? What happened to him? And is the government responsible for any of it? So basically, it was after the 33rd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square assassination, basically, where roughly 3,000 people were killed 33 years ago that day. That same night, Li nonchalantly got his live stream stopped abruptly, and he didn't reappear for a live stream after that. They also reported that while some believe Li was trying to make a political statement, others argued that he was possibly among those who didn't know about the massacre. That statement reflects what a communist country standpoint may look like to some. The Chinese government is known to cover up anything that is not in favor of them or of the country. Some thought the Chinese live streamer were gone. Some people were feeling stories that the Chinese government detained him and cut him off. No one knows for sure because the Lip Sync King has not spoken out since reappearing from the limelight.
Now, what's the relationship between the Lip Sync King and the Chinese government?
Okay, so this is a complicated question, but it kind of remains unknown. He suddenly reappeared, and according to CNN Business, writer Laura says in her blog, Li didn't explain why he disappeared or why he had gone in the past, why he disappeared in the last 3 months. Li's gross income roughly comes to a whopping 12.3 million won, which is equivalent to 1.75 million U.S. dollars, according to CNN Business. His focus is primarily skincare products, fashion pieces, and anything in that realm. Maybe it was something after the massacre anniversary that triggered the Chinese government to go after the Lipstick King. He was one of the largest beauty influencers in the game in China. He sold more than $1.75 million worth of unit sales. Maybe he was looked at as a threat to the government there. We may never know. For New Media Beat, I'm Kayla Sedato. Back to you, Anthony.
Thank you, Kayla. Let's fly from China to Brazil to talk about the presidential election, disinformation, and social media. The big news is that Lula won and Bolsonaro lost. Did social media help win the election for Lula? Did it hurt Bolsonaro? Was misinformation and disinformation spreading on social media a big factor in this outcome? This presidential election in Brazil attracted international attention and controversy. Bolsonaro has been compared to Donald Trump. The election pitted the right-wing nationalism of Bolsonaro against the left-wing socialism of Lula. President Jair Bolsonaro lost, and leftist Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has returned to power. Stephanie Okenwa has been following the election news and asking what part social media played in this presidential election. Stephanie, were there concerns raised about disinformation and social media in Brazilian politics before this election?
There were false rumors and comments made in previous elections in 2018 about how Jair Bolsonaro shouldn't have won and how the United States had a hand in the election process.
What social media platforms were popular during the elections?
Platforms like Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, WhatsApp, Google, Instagram, YouTube, and Kawi were used both outside and inside Brazil.
What was the public's reaction to the election results?
The winner of the presidential election was Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and people of Brazil were mixed. Some were happy that this could lead to a more democratic government, and others, like supporters of Bolsonaro, accused the government of election fraud, taking to the streets in protests and riots.
Mm-hmm. Now, was there any proof of election fraud?
The Brazilian military found no evidence of election fraud, according to sources like The Guardian. The Defense Ministry also sent a 63-page report to the Brazilian election authorities on Wednesday, November 9th. All claims of malicious intent and software hacking machines were extremely unlikely.
So what kind of disinformation was being spread?
During the first and second rounds of the election, there were bouts of misinformation, like lies that Bolsonaro made pedophilic comments or Lula wanting men to use the same bathroom as girls, and how malicious software was used to hack into voting machines. For New Media Beat, I'm Stephanie Okella. Back to you, Anthony.
Thank you, Stephanie. Why would a democratic government shut down the internet for thousands of its citizens? What kind of regional conflict or uprising could lead to such a drastic measure?
Let's talk about media freedom, the government, and the internet in India. The Indian government often shuts down the internet in regions torn by ethnic and political unrest. Can a government stop an uprising by shutting off the internet and mobile phones in a conflict zone? Is this a peacekeeping measure to restore order, or is it political, religious, and ethnic repression? How widespread are these shutdowns? How long do they last? Are these local shutdowns? Why are some parts of India subjected to these shutdowns? Are these internet shutdowns part of a larger repression of media freedom in India? Jada Turner has a report for New Media Beat. Jada, what is the general state of media and press freedom in India under the government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party? Do Modi and the BJP tolerate independent news media and internet freedom in general?
They actually have internet censorship. They have internet filters as usages to help maintain blocked access to the internet.
How does government justify the blackouts?
The government justifies the blackouts due to security, protests, cheating in school exams, and many other like law order issues.
So how does shutting down the internet affect the people of India?
Due to the recent pandemic, many relied on social media to connect with families far away, as well as receiving news and to be aware of what's going on locally and in other countries. So the ban of the internet has stopped that. For New Media Beat, I'm Jada Turner. Back to you, Joanna.
Thanks, Jada. Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our producer, Michael Green, and our engineer, Jacob Friedenberg. Many thanks to my co-host, Anthony Moyet.
Thank you, Joanna. Today we heard from Emma Koutsis, Stephanie Okenwa, Alyssa Quadrini, Kayla Sedetto, Jada Turner, and Joanna Vizicelli.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.